This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we're talking about Chicago, the movie adaptation of the Broadway musical. The soundtrack has just been released. Here's Catherine Zeta-Jones singing the opening number.
Come on, babe, why don't we paint the town? And all that jazz, I'm gonna rouge my knees and roll my stockings down. And all that jazz, start the car. I know a whoopee spot where the gin is cold, but the piano's hot. It's just a noisy hall where there's a nightly brawl. And all that jazz.
My guest Rob Marshall is the director and choreographer of Chicago. It's a musical he already knew well. He directed a theatrical revival of Chicago in Los Angeles. He choreographed and co-directed the Broadway revival of Cabaret, which, like Chicago, has songs by John Kander and Fred Ebb. Marshall also directed a revival of the Burt Bacharach musical Promises, Promises, starring Martin Short, and choreographed the Broadway revival of Damn Yankees. Chicago is set in the 20s during the Prohibition era. Renee Zellweger plays Roxy Hart, who dreams of singing and dancing her way out of poverty into stardom. She's cheating on her husband with a man who says he has contacts and can pull strings to get her booked into a nightclub. When she finds out he's lying, she shoots him. In prison, she meets Velma Kelly, a nightclub star who found her husband cheating on her with her sister, so she shot them both. Velma is played by Catherine Zeta-Jones. Richard Gere plays the slick lawyer who turns Roxy's case into a media circus. In the scene where Roxy first lands in jail, the women prisoners explain why they've killed their husbands and lovers in a song and dance called the Cell Block Tango. I asked Rob Marshall to compare his choreography for the Cell Block Tango with Bob Fosse's, who did the original 1975 Broadway production.
You know, on stage originally, Bob Fosse did it with these wonderful jail bars that they each had their own set of jail bars, and they would move around the stage in wonderful patterns and stomp the jail bars on the floor and so forth. And I wanted to try something completely different, so I came up with the idea of having them actually tango with their victims. And so I brought men into the piece, and so that they could sort of throw them around and be abusive to the men that had abused them. And so that whole idea, by bringing the men into it, led me down a completely different path. I could actually do a tango. And so I didn't feel like I had to follow in the footsteps of the original concept of the number. So I tried to, with each number, reconceive the number. So I, you know, didn't find myself, you know, having this ghost of Fosse over me.
Why don't we hear a little bit of the song, He Had It Coming, in which the women who killed their husbands or lovers are explaining why they did it.
I met Ezekiel Young from Salt Lake City about 2 years ago, and he told me he was single, and we hit it off right away. So we started living together. He'd go to work, he'd come home, I'd fix him a drink, we'd have dinner, and then I found out. Single, he told me. Single my ass. Not only was he married, oh no, he had 6 wives. One of those Mormons, you know. So that night when he came home from work, I fixed him his drink, as usual. You know, some guys just can't hold their arsenic.
He had it coming, Pops. He had it coming, Cicero. She took a power in it with pride. And then he used it, and he abused it. It was a murder, as well as a heart.
Now I'm standing in the kitchen, carving up a chicken for dinner, minding my own business. In storms my husband will.
That's the Cell Block Tango, He Had It Coming, from Chicago. My guest is the director and choreographer of the new film adaptation, Rob Marshall. Your choreography for the sequence is very, it's, you know, it's a tango, and there's something very, you know, almost sadomasochistic about the way it's choreographed, and also in the way that everybody is dressed. How intentional is that? I mean, what kind of look are you going for there?
Well, I had this incredible costume designer, Colleen Atwood, who had a real, amazing skills as a designer. Has done most of the Tim Burton films and has a wild imagination and such taste. And you know, obviously, she had to, you know, design in two different worlds. One was our vaudeville world. One was our real world. And the vaudeville world, you know, there's a great deal of flexibility there and range because it takes place in her mind. So, you know, I remember for that specific number, Colleen found this beautiful 1920s portrait of this woman who was in these sort of strappy kind of, I don't even know what you call it, sort of like a leotard type thing, but it was really risque. I mean, the clothes then were really unbelievably risque. The women, you know, rarely wore bras. It was short skirts. It was really a sort of a female empowerment time. And, she found this great strappy kind of thing. And I think that was sort of became that actual photograph from the early 20s became sort of our idea for this number. And, you know, yeah, it's a very aggressive number. It's violent in a way but still satirical, I think, too.
Yeah, let me be more blunt about the costumes. I mean, the women are wearing these like black leather straps, basically. You know,
right.
with dark and stockings, and I think what, like black heeled boots, maybe.
Yep, some have boots on. Yep, it was a lot of straps. Honestly, that came from actual pictures of the period. But it, yes, absolutely, it has a little bit of that sadomasochism there, but sexy too, I think.
Yeah. Well, speaking of sexy, the opening number, All That Jazz, in which Catherine Zeta-Jones is the main dancer and singer, she too is wearing a lot of flimsy and revealing black leather. How do you make dance really sexy look? What kind of movements to you, what style of movement says sex to you?
Well, let me say, you know, I don't. It's funny, I don't even think in terms of sex. I think all movement is very sexual in a way because you're, you know, you're moving your body in ways that you don't normally do. And so I think this particular number, one of the sort of conceptual ideas behind it was I had men and women on stage, and I really thought of it sort of as, you know, I hate to say this word, you know, but sort of like, you know, because I just met you, Terry, it's sort of like an orgy, you know. The idea is that everybody on stage is sort of moving through other people, and it was like a club within a club. In other words, you're in this club, and it's sort of spilling out over this on the stage into the club. And so I created this little club on stage where these men and women were moving through each other and around each other and feeling each other. And, you know, and it's all about sort of being free and loose, and which is, and I, you know, I take a lot of my inspiration from the brilliant Fred Ebb lyrics. I mean, you hear those lyrics, you know, when you're saying, find a flask, we're playing fast and loose, and that you can just start choreographing that just by hearing those great words. So that helped me into the material.
What do you think is the difference between what Bob Fosse found really sexy or sensual as a choreographer and what you do?
Well, you know, it's always hard to just sort of dissect styles. I think Bob had a very specific style that came from his physicality. I mean, he smoked, and so cigarettes were always in his numbers. He had sort of a hunched over shoulders, and so, you know, there was always a sort of a hunch sensibility to his work. He loved, I think he was very much influenced by Fred Astaire and Balanchine and Jack Cole. So a lot of his stuff was very detailed, small movements, a lot of isolation. I think if I had
by isolation, you mean like one shoulder moves or one hip moves?
Right, exactly. One finger moves.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that my style is probably more abandoned than that, more character-driven than that. I don't force my style, one specific style, you know, on people. I try to work from what they have. And I also try to tell the story. So that's where my work, that's what inspires me.
Let's talk about the casting. Catherine Zeta-Jones is a star. She plays Velma. And I didn't know until Chicago that she had a background in musical theater when she was in London. And she started in a West End production of 42nd Street. I guess everybody knows that now, but very few people knew that until Chicago. How did you know that she had the gifts to do this? She's really terrific in the film.
Well, Marty Richards, who's our producer, had told me that Catherine had a voice and had danced. He was a friend of theirs, theirs meaning Michael Douglas and Catherine Zeta-Jones, and had heard her sing at a Christmas party. You know, it's so funny, because musicals aren't done these days, you find yourself really doing detective work, you know, trying to figure out, oh, I heard somebody did this, or I heard in their background they did this. Anyway, so Marty sort of let me know that she had done that, that, you know, had sung and sounded great, and he had also told me that she had starred in 42nd Street in the West End. And then I found out, you know, that as a kid she had been in Annie in the West End and Bugsy Malone, and then started doing chorus work and Pajama Game and things like that. And then I actually saw a tape of her on the Olivier Awards doing Kurt Vile's Street Scene, and she did a big jitterbug number called Moonface and Starry-Eyed, where she sang and danced, and that was great because, you know, I saw everything in that dance number that I needed to see. I mean, she was tapping and turning and kicking and being lifted, and she also sang so with such a great voice. It was sort of like, wow, I didn't realize, you know, she had those gifts. And so it was sort of all the combination of all those things that sort of let me know that she was the real deal.
I feel like thanking you for casting somebody in the lead who has a little bit of flesh on her bone. She has a beautiful figure, but she doesn't look like a skeleton, and so many dancers really, really do. And I think that really works, because she has to look pretty tough and kind of threatening, and she's able to pull that off.
I really love weight. You know, I love weight on. I love real people. I like real people dancing. I thought she looked like a real woman, and I love the dynamic between that and Roxy. Roxy is this waifish wannabe, and so the dynamic between the two was so important. I really did not want to cast the same person twice. Mm-hmm, you know, I didn't want the same gal twice. I really wanted distinctly different people playing these roles.
Now, you cast Richard Gere in the male lead, Renee Zellweger in one of the female leads. They don't really have song and dance backgrounds. Did you try to find people who really had a background in song and dance as well as acting?
Billy Flynn, with Richard Gere's role, you know, he does have a major song and dance background. It's just nobody knew about it. You know, he played Danny Zuko in Grease in the West End. That was one of his first big jobs. And then he had done a series of rock musicals before he went into film. But nobody knows that, because musicals aren't done anymore. So, you know, if we were living in the 40s or 50s, he would have done, you know, 6 or 7 musicals by now. But nobody knew of those skills. And you know, it's something that just rolled right off of him. I mean, he has this amazing ability to, you know, I don't know if you know, he plays the guitar, he plays the piano, plays the cornet, he sings every day. This is a very musical person. It's something that he loves but had never had the chance to do since he was a kid, you know. So, and I had been, you know, 25 years or something since he had done it. So he was loving rediscovering it again. And he worked so hard. I mean, the one thing he was not was a tap dancer. And that took, I mean, I've never seen anybody work so hard in my life. I mean, he literally would go into a room and curse and swear and go through like wet t-shirt after wet t-shirt of sweat until, you know, he got, I mean, I think he worked for 3 months to get where he needed to be for this tap dance, because he'd never done that before. And, you know, tap's all about rhythm, and he's a real musician, so that part was great. It was just sort of like training your brain to your feet. And then in terms of Roxy, I mean, Renee, that was the trickiest part to cast. I saw maybe over a dozen major film actresses for that role, because I didn't know. I didn't know who had the skills, and because, like I say, they're just not done anymore, musicals, so... we started the quote-unquote Scarlett O'Hara search for Roxy, and you know, I've worked with many people that, you know, actors that are new to musicals. Natasha Richardson in Cabaret on Stage, Alan Cumming was new to musicals. Kathy Bates, when I did Annie, you know, I put Whoopi Goldberg into a form. Funny Thing Happened Away, the form that was new for her. I love working with people who are new to musicals. It's fun for me to work from that place, from character. And, with Renee, it was, she walked in and we started working, and I literally knew within like 10 seconds that she could do it, because I saw her dance line. I saw her athletic ability immediately. I saw her sense of style and how she could bring the character to life through movement and through her voice. And it was, you know, it was like, hallelujah. Because we find, I thought, now I have a movie.
In a lot of musicals from the 50s and 60s, the singing was actually dubbed. You know, even in West Side Story, you know, Natalie Wood is dubbed in most of her songs.
Yes, by Marnie Nixon.
Yeah. So did anyone suggest to you the horrible possibility of dubbing your leading actors?
You know what? I think because I come from the theater, they know that I would have spun around and said, no way. Because I don't want to do, you know, it's funny. You see My Fair Lady now, which is such a beautiful, beautiful movie, and Marnie Nixon sounds great, but every time I hear Audrey Hepburn open her mouth to sing and Marnie Nixon comes out, it just pulls you out of the story. It's just, it bothers me. So I really didn't want to do that. I didn't want to do that ever. And it's funny, a lot of people after the movie, after you had been seeing the, you know, the beginning sort of, you know, test screenings of the movie, were saying, well, obviously that's not Richard Gere tap dancing. And I was like, yes, it is. It's every single,
oh, no,
every
but that's
single
the thing.
Frame at the, of that is Richard.
At the very end of the credits, there's a credit that says that Catherine Zeta-Jones, Renee Zellweger, and Richard Gere did their own singing and dancing.
Yes.
So everybody on the film must have felt that it was necessary to actually go on the record at the end of the film and say that.
Well, we did it with sort of a little bit of a sense of humor about it because, you know, it was, we were just saying, how can we let people know that these people who work so hard to sing and dance, and, you know, we went through a 6 weeks of rehearsal where it was like theatrical boot camp, and you know, I just wanted their, I wanted to make sure that they had their due, you know, and so we thought, well, you know what, we'll put that at the end of the movie, just so people know it's the truth, but also with a little bit of sense of humor about it, you know.
Now, Chicago was not edited like a Fred Astaire musical. In a Fred Astaire musical, the camera pulled back and you saw Astaire and Rogers dance. Maybe there were a couple of edits, but basically you saw them dance, or sort of the whole bodies as they were dancing, and everything stops while they dance. In Chicago, the dance numbers are very highly edited, and I'd like you to describe your approach to editing it, the thinking behind it, the rhythm of it. I sometimes find that kind of fast-paced editing in a production number really frustrating because you feel like you don't get to see what anybody's doing. By the time they're finished with a movement, you're already cutting to the next movement, and you don't really get the pleasure of watching somebody dance. I didn't feel that frustration with the way you edited it.
Well, you know, it's a balance. You know, with this piece, actually, I felt that the language of our concept took us there, because the only way to tell the story was to be moving back and forth between these two worlds. And so that energy and that language, which you set up right from the very beginning as you're telling many different stories at once, sort of lent us to the style of how to edit it. You know, people have asked me, did you edit this because, you know, it's the MTV generation and you can't sit on something for that short? And it's like, no. I served this particular piece, which was being told very specifically in two different worlds. And that's why that rhythm, you know, it's interesting. If you set up that rhythm, if you then depart from that rhythm, it seems odd and dishonest. And I experiment with lots of things. I mean, truthfully, I could have sat on these numbers and just done a master, and they would have been beautiful because, you know, I come from stage, so I know how to do that. You know, I don't have to be afraid that it's going to sort of just sit there and look, you know, kind of dull, because I can keep a stage moving, because those are my roots, you know. And where you can't edit on stage, you just have to sort of let it sit there in the master. But it was very intentional, the editing that I did, because I wanted to keep the language and the energy of the piece consistent. And because we had created this idea that we'd be moving back and forth between these two worlds while still telling one linear story, then that became how to serve this piece, and that's why I chose to sort of edit it that way.
In Chicago, you work with some performers who are used to acting, but not that used to singing. And
right.
I think when an actor's really good, that they can convince you that they're a great singer, even if they're not. Because they so look the part and they act out the lyrics so well. And I'll give you an example. I mean, like, I like Marlena Dietrich singing, but when she's performing in a movie, she's so spellbinding because she so inhabits that kind of sexual persona that mm-hmm. you're just so convinced of the personality of this song, you know that.
Yes.
So would you just talk a little bit about working with non-singers who act and what you can get from them in a singing role?
Such a great question, Terry. I mean, you know, when you think about some of our greatest musical theater performances, you know, you think of Rex Harrison in My Fair Lady, or you think of Yul Brynner in King and I, and you think of Lauren Bacall in Applause, and I can go on and on and on. These aren't major singers. You know, they're not going to have an album out of just them singing, you know. I think you have to, I mean, it's my philosophy, and I just feel you have to cast the part first, the character. That's the most important thing. And of course they're going to have to be able to sing. I mean, that's how but if you do it the other way, you just cast the singer and you don't have the actor, you have a hollow production. I've seen it so many times. In fact, in the 80s, with the sort of influx of the sung-through musicals, you know, you see a musical and everybody has great voices, but there's not a personality on stage. There's not a person up there. There's not a person with color. It's all kind of just very whitewashed. And it's very pretty and it sounds lovely, but you're not moved in any way, shape, or form. I like the rough edges, you know. I like hearing a person sing. Now, I don't necessarily like hearing a person sing badly. And it's really great when they can be a great actor and can sing, and you know, as well. But I have to say that I think the most important thing is that the person inhabits the character. Because I'm moved in a song, not because somebody hits a high note, but I'm moved in a song because something emotional is happening to that character, and they're expressing it through song. So that's sort of how I feel.
One of the performers in Chicago is Queen Latifah, who is an actress who's also known for her rap recordings.
Yes.
She sings, and she sings really well in Chicago. She also sang in the movie Living Out Loud, in which she played a lounge singer.
Yeah.
Would you talk about directing her in her big number, which is called When You're Good to Mama?
Well, it's interesting.
She plays the prison warden in the women's prison, and
yes.
and she cuts deals with everybody.
Yes.
And the understanding is some deals are for money. Probably some of the deals are for sexual favors.
Yes, exactly. That's sort of the intention. You know, she is a performer. You know, she's a fabulous lady to work with, and she comes from rap and not necessarily sort of musical theater, but she certainly understands performance from her days as a rapper. And she has, it's so funny, she just has this naturally big Broadway voice. But, you know, it was so funny as we started working on it, I thought, wow, this is, you know, where has this great talent been? This wonderful talent, she's our Pearl Bailey, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see her get up there and do a Broadway musical, because she's just, it's just in her blood. And it was funny, the day we were shooting it, I completely, the morning of, completely reblocked her song, which she wasn't too thrilled with. But I knew I had made a mistake. You know, the most important thing for me was that I was really serving these people and making them as great as they could be. And I had left her on stage for the whole number. And I thought, you know, this is the Sophie Tucker number. And this is, you know, Latifah's so great with interacting with people. You know, she had her own talk show and so forth and so on. I should get her into the audience during the number. So the morning of, I reblocked it and put her in the audience for most of the number. And I felt that intimacy with the audience was something that would give her, I don't know.
This is a very double entendre kind of song. So doing the double entendre with the people appreciating it works.
Yes, closer to them. So she could, exactly. So she could get right into their face and be funny right there. You know,
right.
I felt Sophie Tucker would have done that. She would have gone out in the audience and been kind of, you know, brass and kind of, you know, kind of sexy and funny so I thought, you know, change it, Rob. Do it now. And she was great.
Rob Marshall directed and choreographed the new film Chicago. From the new soundtrack, here's Queen Latifah singing When You're Good to Mama.
Mama's good to you. If you want my gravy, pepper my ragu. Spice it up for mama, she'll get hot for you.
When they pass that basket, folks contribute too. You put in for mama, she'll put out for you. The folks atop the ladder are the ones the world adores. So boost me up my ladder, kid, and I'll boost you up yours. Let's all stroke together like the Princeton crew. When you're stroking mama, mama's stroking you. So what's the one conclusion I could bring this number two? When you're good to mama,